3 hours, I sat in the same seat just waiting for Stephen to mount, like, to get onto the stage. I didn't move. I didn't really want to talk to anybody. I just went there and I said, I'm going to talk to Stephen, and that's it.
Ruth Emeku is the girl who forced herself into Flight Studio, which is the home of the UK's leading podcast, which is hosted by none other than Stephen Bartlett. After months of working through the various departments with Stephen's team, Ruth, who's a marketing specialist, is here to show you how you can land insane opportunities with other high-profile people.
Yeah, I think I had a conversation with Timothy Amu about that, and he said...
In today's episode, Ruth talks about how she landed the internship with Stephen Bartlett.
When I spoke to Stephen, I was so scared. Like, anyone who was near me in that room would have seen me visibly shaking with the mic in my hand and stammering.
How you can stand out from the crowd.
I jumped up.
Oh, okay.
As soon as the Q&A session was on, I think I leaped up from my seat.
And other mistakes you can be sure to avoid. Now enjoy the show. Hi guys, welcome to another episode of What My Best Friend Does, where we talk to best friends in the hope of inspiring you to take immediate action. Today, I'm talking to my best friend, the marketing specialist, Ruth Emeku. Ruth, how
are
you doing?
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing very well, thank you. How are you?
Great, I'm happy to be here today.
Happy to have you on the show. We like to start with a little icebreaker. What did you want to be growing up?
Oh wow, so I think growing up, I actually... wanted to be a businesswoman of some sort.
Okay.
I used to wear like very tiny suits because I was very young. I think it was like 6 or 7 when I decided that I really wanted to be a businesswoman. My parents were really, really supportive. So they'd buy me like tiny little suits and I'd walk around and I'd wear them and I'd feel really, just really proud and happy. So yeah, when I was younger, that's really what I wanted to do.
Okay, so you wanted to be... a businesswoman.
I did.
You've ended up as a marketing specialist. And also, like, for the listener, for those who might think they recognise Ruth or not, like, let's take it back to October 2023. It was the Black Business Week. And there's a special guest headlining the conference. His name's Stephen Bartlett. And you get to the end and there's a Q&A.
Yep.
Ruth asked a question, and that question essentially maybe changes the trajectory of her life. And the question she asks is, can you give me a little bit of your time? Right?
So yeah.
That's just a little bit of a teaser for like what Ruth has been doing. But before we get into that, Ruth, like, can you like take us through your career journey up until that point and that conference?
Yeah, so to be honest, I had a very kind of like normal upbringing beforehand. I went to Aston University. I studied international business and management, and I was quite lucky because the year that I went to uni, they offered a free language course. So actually what happened is I had failed French, I think twice. So I failed it at GCSE, and then I thought, I can't be that stupid, surely. So then I picked it up again for my A-levels and decided to go again, even though I had failed it. And then I failed it the second time. And I went to Aston University and they offered language courses. And then I then chose Mandarin. I chose the hardest language I could Wow. think of because I convinced myself that surely I am not stupid. Surely the language was just too difficult for me and I could do better. So I chose Mandarin and I studied that for several years. And once I graduated, or I guess in the midst of university, I should backtrack a little bit. I ended up continuing Mandarin and working and studying abroad. Oh, wow. So I ended up living in Hong Kong for a couple of months to kind of perfect my Mandarin. And I knew that if I lived there, it'd be a lot easier to speak the language because I'd be fully immersed and I'd be able to interact with people who spoke it a lot fluently. Or much more fluently than I did. And then I worked in Portugal as a content assistant for a startup kind of company. And I ended up being promoted as a content manager. And because it was such a small team, I ended up having so many different responsibilities, but it was an amazing experience. So I've always kind of been into marketing. I've always kind of been a super creative person. Unfortunately for me, in the midst of the pandemic, is when I graduated. So the world kind of shut down and I didn't really get the opportunity to have like a normal job immediately after. So I ended up just teaching myself graphic design throughout the entire pandemic. I just started making like wedding invitations and birthday flyers on WhatsApp for my friends like that. And it just kept growing until people started paying me for it. And I just started making loads of like printable assets or like business assets for Instagram or for flyers, menus and things like that. So that's kind of how I started my journey.
I love it. There's a few things I want to dive straight into. Mm-hmm. So first thing is university.
Yeah.
And like we all know, over the past few years, university fees have, you know, continued to rise and rise.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like it was, you know, you learned some invaluable skills learning Mandarin at university. Like, in your opinion,
yeah,
do you think university is worth the price of admission?
Do I think it's worth the price of admission? I think it would really depend on what you choose to study.
Okay.
Personally, for me, even though I had a great experience at university, I probably wouldn't want to immediately do it again, because I think that, as we can see in our generation, there are so many other ways to be successful outside of the traditional means of going to university, getting a degree, studying, and then going through that entire process. I think for maybe more technical or medicinal subjects or healthcare related subjects, going to university is an absolute, it's mandatory.
Mm-hmm.
But for myself, who's naturally quite creative, very savvy, I'm into business, I don't think that you need it. You could probably still be very successful outside of it. I mean, Stephen's amazing proof that you don't have to go to university, and he's not the only one. So do I think it's worth it? I think that just depends on what you want to do. But I'd also think you should never allow something to limit you.
Mm.
You can always go above and beyond. So yes, it may not be worth it, but then what are you going to do about it?
I love it. And then you mentioned the fact that after you'd studied in Hong Kong,
yeah,
you ended up taking a content job in Portugal. Like, when did you start thinking about what was next? And yeah, why was it content? Because you like you said, you wanted to be a businesswoman, you did international business at university. So yeah, what was it that made you veer towards the content and like learning graphic design and that creative side, I suppose, of the industry?
I think I just tried to focus on what I was good at, and I really did not enjoy doing anything that I thought I sucked at. And if you give me anything numbers based, finance, anything like that, like, I won't do it. I don't even waste time. So I just start off with doing things that I naturally enjoy, and being creative was something that always came almost quite naturally to me. It made me happy. I think that it was just things that would bring me a lot of joy when I did it. So whenever I would like Google careers, because I was very career driven from a very young age, I just Googled the skill set that I had on, I think, a website called like prospects.com.
Okay.
And you can kind of go in there and like there's a quiz for all of like for your career, essentially. So if you put in all of the things that you're good at, it'll give you a list of all the careers that you can go down. And I would always go in there anytime I gained a new skill, whether it was graphic design or copywriting or like just anything at all, I would go in there and then it would just come up with those of things. And then one consistent thing that came up was marketing. So it just made sense to kind of focus on what I was good at, then go back and correct all the things I'm not good at when I would probably never be the best at it.
Mm, I love it. And then, like you said, you finished university, you know, during the pandemic. And then, we get to 2023. Yeah, can you talk to us about what is it that motivated you to attend the conference?
Mm.
And then, can you talk to us about the experience and, how you ended up with Stephen Butlett and the team?
Absolutely. So I think running up to the Black Business Show, I did have a full-time job. It was a very stable job. I worked in public sector, so government-funded projects to support small businesses like in the West Midlands. But it was a very comfortable role, and I felt like, I think at that point, I had outgrown it. I had taken every opportunity that was in front of me, and I did the best that I could. But I was getting really itchy feet, and I wanted something more exciting, something a bit more challenging. And before that point, I had already listened to Stephen's podcast quite consistently. I would listen to it during work. I'd listen to it in my spare time. I'd always get told off for listening to it during work. And I just honestly just didn't give a damn. I just didn't care. You couldn't tell me anything. Yeah. So I think at that point, I knew that I wanted to do something different, but I didn't know what it was going to be. And I think I just stumbled upon someone giving away a free ticket on Instagram. So I didn't even have the ticket the day of the show. I think I got it the day of the show or the night before. Oh. I was really unprepared. And I think people are always surprised when I tell them that it was like, it was very last minute. I didn't prepare. So I forced one of my friends to come along with me. And she came, and I just told her, what we're going to do is during that Q&A session, I'm going to talk to Stephen, and I just need someone to help me get the microphone. And she really did. She went to the back and like told one of the girls, look, you need to walk to the front. This girl needs the mic. And I don't know if she listened or not, but she got me the mic. Or one of the girls did actually walk up to me and handed me the mic. And
was your hand up?
I jumped up.
Oh, okay.
As soon as the Q&A session was on, like I think I leaped up from my seat. And I wasn't the only one. There were other people in the room that stood up, but I think I just might have wanted it more.
Okay. Yeah, and like, was it the first kind of event that you'd been to, or was this like something that you'd done regularly?
That was my first time at the Black Business Show. I was just lucky that, and somewhat prepared that what I wanted actually happened. I had no intention to talk to anybody else that day. I went there and I sat in the same seat for the entire time. It was for 3 hours. I sat in the same seat just waiting for Stephen to mount, like to get onto the stage. I didn't move. I didn't really want to talk to anybody. I just went there and I said, I'm going to talk to Stephen, and that's it. And
so you had like a goal in mind.
I did.
So when you made that last minute decision, you were like, the way I'm going to maximize the ROI on going to this event was to speak to Stephen by hook or by crook.
Yep.
And then to those who don't know, and if you've not seen it, Steve's got a Behind the Diary episode, I think it's episode 12. You can see Ruth. I watched it again last night. I'd already watched it before, but watched it again last night, and you can see the whole interaction. And then I suppose like my question is, so you ask him for a bit of time. He goes, yep, yeah, I'm going to do better than give you a little bit of time. I'm going to give you a month's internship with the team.
Yeah.
Like, all right, he says that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure a lot of people say things like that.
Yeah.
So, like, what is the, like, immediate thing that happens? Like, do you get to meet him after the show again to talk to him a little bit more? Did the team reach out to you? Like, talk us through, some of what are the emotions you're feeling as well?
Yeah, I think at that point, I think I was just scared that I was going to lose my job. Because I had just sold myself to Stephen, telling him that I would love to work with him. Meanwhile, I had a manager, I had a team, and I think my first thing was, I'm so screwed. Like, I'm going to get in trouble. So I was a bit just apprehensive. But at the same time, I thought I had nothing to lose.
Mm.
And I really, really wanted it. And at that point, it was the gap between what's the worst that can happen. And I just thought, I'd rather take that risk. And I think whenever I speak to other young people, because I get questions on LinkedIn all the time, and I just say, just take the risk. Because honestly, what's the worst thing that can happen? I'd actually rather get told off and take the risk than to sit there and think that, oh, I don't really know. I'm feeling a bit nervous. I'd rather just go in all in and just see what happens. So after the show, I mean, if whoever watched this video, if you've seen it, Stephen got immediately crowded, like on that day. And I couldn't even get through to him after the show. But he told me that his team would contact me or that I could contact his team. So somebody from the Black Business Show gave me Stephen's manager's email.
Oh, okay,
and I just started spamming them immediately.
Emailed them. And like you said spamming, right?
Yeah.
Because there's one thing getting the details.
Yeah.
I've also been given details for people, but it doesn't mean that they got to get in contact with you. So yeah, like did it take a lot of persistence to get the meeting and the next
steps? It still did. But I think I was willing to go down and do the work. So I would email his manager regularly. I would try not to cross the line, because there is an element of being just irritating.
Mm-hmm.
So I would try and balance between, oh, I'm just really excited to, could you just tell me when I'm going to come in? Like, I would just really, you know, try and find a nice middle ground. But I would email them regularly. I would tell them what I was doing. I would just, like, I would just make sure that they wouldn't forget about me. So it actually took several months between the day that I met Stephen and then when I actually got the internship. But I think in that, like, waiting season, it's really important to not become inactive, because I could have easily just been you know, a oh, bit yeah, like, I've got this oh, I've got up. This coming up. This isn't, you know, this is great. I'm just not going to do much. But I didn't have that attitude. I think shortly after I met Stephen, I then met Patricia Bright at a similar event. And I got to speak to her. And then after that, I then hosted an event called Empower Her. And I did I facilitated a panel session. I just did a milestone after. I think I was, I supported the cover of the Birmingham Business Magazine. So it wasn't just, okay, now I'm working with Steve and I'm just going to wait till I get to work with him. I kept doing other things. I kept trying to reach new goals. I kept challenging myself in new ways. I kept scaring myself in new ways and taking risks, because just because something's happening doesn't mean that you should stop and slow down. Like, I don't want to be a lazy person or particularly relaxed person. I'm actually just naturally very ambitious. So even though I had the internship with Steven coming up, I just kept doing other things until that day happened.
I love it. As you've spoken there about meeting Patricia Bright, hosting the panel, like, was it the confidence you got from meeting Stephen that propelled you onto those things? Or if you weren't chosen to ask a question on that day, would you still have gone on, you think, to execute on all of these other things that you did?
I had met the mayor of the West Midlands. I had met so many other people before meeting Stephen. When Stephen said yes, I kind of felt like, oh, like, you said yes? I've been asking for something like this for such a long time, and you were the first person to really offer it to me. But I think that 10-second or that 90-second conversation with Stephen is nothing compared to all the hours of meetings and of trying and of hard work and of, you know, being rejected for years. That was like the one time somebody said yes to me. And it was public and it was recorded and it was at a big event. But that wasn't the first time I had done it. I had done it so many other times. That was just what happened.
Ruth, I love hearing that. And just to echo, like, what was said on a podcast that we recorded recently. We spoke about the door of opportunity, and what people tend to do is knock on the door of opportunity quietly. But the most successful people, they knock loudly and they knock often, because, you know, like a door, if you knock a little bit, you can get ignored. But if you knock, you knock, you knock, and you keep knocking, eventually someone's going to come and go, what do you want? And that someone is opportunity. And it just is. Sounds like you knocked loudly and long enough. And I love that. And just, yeah, like, so to the listener, obviously, you know, they've not been to an event, but yeah, they're trying to get themselves into new circles, put themselves in front of some more important people.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, what tactics and advice could you give them to potentially start their own journey of, yeah, potentially getting in front of the right people?
I think there is an element of just always being prepared, because for me to be able to go to the Black Business Show and speak to Stephen in 90 seconds, I had been doing that for years. So I think if you want something to happen to you, you can't wait for that moment or that. There's no such thing as a perfect, I'm sure everybody's heard it, but it really is true. There's no perfect time, you know, to do anything. The best time to do something is now, and there's no point waiting, because you're just gonna waste time. So if there's something that you really wanna do, just start practicing. So and the truth is, and I'll be completely honest, when I spoke to Stephen, I was so scared. Like, anyone who was near me in that room would have seen me visibly shaking with the mic in my hand and stammering. And when I'm nervous, I have a tendency to speak very fast. So in all of that embarrassment, I still just had the courage to make the most out of the opportunity. And I say that to anybody that speaks to me. You're always going to be scared in every situation. So you have to just feel the fear and do it anyway, because the fear is not going to go away. I still get nervous when I have to speak in front of thousands of people, but I just can't allow that to hold me back. So I've actually forgotten your question, so I'm not sure if I've answered it.
I was just saying, that's absolutely fine. I was saying to the listener, if they want to get in front of the right people, what should they do? And yeah, you said it perfectly. Start now. And you know, it's going to be daunting, but feel the fear and do it anyway. So you got the question.
Okay.
You answered it perfectly.
Great.
Thank you so much.
I think I might add, whenever I've tried to get in front of the right people, it's always helped in doing it in a public place. Because you won't believe it, but it would have actually been harder for Stephen, or easier for Stephen to reject me if there were less people there. But the fact that I said it in front of thousands of people in that room the pressure was on. And people may not want to admit it, but maybe if there was only 10 people in the room, he may have said no. But there was a lot of people. So naturally, there is a pressure to uphold the standard. So if you want to speak to somebody, there's no harm in actually doing it in a public place. If I go to a conference and there's somebody there that I really want to work with, I will gladly get the mic and ask them in a public place, because there's a lot of people there. And I think it does help to address things in a public place. It's not always easy, and you will always be scared while you do it, but if you can catch them, and truthfully, that's the only place you can catch them. You're not really going to catch Stephen in his house, you're not really going to catch him on the podcast, and he doesn't walk around on the street anymore. Yeah. He actually can't afford to do that because of his own safety. So if you want to speak to him, find him, and just be the first one to do it. And that doesn't go just for Stephen. I think that goes for anybody that you want to speak to. Just find them and speak to them in a public place, because that's the best place that you can find them.
And in terms of, yeah, catching people in a public place, mm-hmm. I suppose the best thing you can do is make sure you're following the people that you want to meet on social
Absolutely.
Media. So when they do announce that they're going to be talking at a conference or in this place or that place, you're the first to know, and you can make sure that you've got that access. Because I know there's going to be some people who are like, well, how do I see them?
Yeah.
You see them by making sure that you're engaged with them. And this is why they have so many followers.
That
because
is.
So many people want to know what they're doing.
Yeah.
So they could potentially maybe engineer a conversation, or just because they find them inspirational. But this is the like first tactical step you can take.
Absolutely. And I think if you genuinely do want to work with someone, you should already be following them. You should already know where they're going to be to some degree. You may not know exactly, but they'll speak at an event, or they'll be in a specific location, or they'll announce it some way or another. So you just kind of have to keep your finger on the pulse and keep an idea of, you know, where they're going to be. But there are other ways. Of course, you can always email them and send them letters, but you know, they're always going to get loads of emails and loads of letters. So you do really have to start thinking outside the box. I'm not sure if you saw on the other Behind the Diary series, one of the girls
the
did.
Board.
Yeah, she got like, I don't know what you call them, like an advert car. I think that's what they, I'm not sure what they're called, but she put her CV on it and drove outside the venue that Stephen was at. She also got through to Stephen.
Yeah.
So I think just thinking outside the box, knowing where they're going to be, because I didn't do that, but she also, and we both got opportunities from that. So thinking outside the box, knowing where the celebrity is going to be, the high profile person is going to be, and just maximizing that opportunity and just trying your best to be the first.
Mm-hmm. I love it, Ruth. And that brings us like nicely into like what the internship was actually like.
Yeah.
So you quit your job.
I did.
So this is going to be a 1 month, or do you agree that it's going to be longer straight off the bat?
No. So Stephen only offered me a month.
Yeah.
It did get extended. And I can explain to you how I managed to do that. That was a lot of convincing, But I quit my job because I wanted to take this opportunity wholeheartedly.
Well,
I wanted to take that risk.
Sorry
my
to
company.
Jump in. Yeah.
Yeah. They actually invited me back this year as a keynote speaker and a host for an event that they had, which was great. So I think wherever you go in your career, don't burn bridges. Mm-hmm. I was never disrespectful. I was never dishonest. I was really open and honest with my manager, with her manager, with the CEO. And I would actually book one-to-ones with the CEO of my previous company because I wanted to have honest conversations with them and tell them where I wanted to take my career. So yeah, never burn bridges, because one, if you know, they can come back and kick you, but then also you never know what's going to come out of that relationship. And I really appreciate what they did to me, the opportunities that they've offered me, and they were very, very, very supportive. As I was leaving to go and work with Stephen, they, you know, we had a dinner and everything. It was beautiful. So yeah, they were really super supportive.
I mean, first and foremost, great. And like, for me personally, for somebody who I, an employer I'd want to work for, that's the least I'd expect. And the reason I say that is because, one, like, your employer should want the best for you. And two, like, if we're being, like, real, it's great for them. Like, oh my God, look, we produced this person. We produced Ruth, who's now gone off to... So, like, your manager's probably, like... She's probably, like, there, like, going, walking down the halls, like, yeah, I'm the man. Oh, I'm the woman. I'm the man. Like, do you know what I mean?
I do,
so,
yeah.
Like, yeah.
It does.
They need to support you. And I'm sure they're thriving off the back of it as well. But yeah, we get to the Diary of a CEO Studios mm-hmm. or Flight Studio. Yeah. I don't know which one you're part of. Can you talk me through, yeah, what are the emotions like on day one?
Mm-hmm.
Who is it you're introduced to? Mm-hmm. And yeah, like, give us an insight into what the internship was like.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But I think it might be worth explaining what Flight Studio is.
Yes, please, please.
Yeah, so I think Stephen's mentioned it before, but what's happened is that he's now created a media brand, and the media brand is Flight Studio. So all of the new podcasts that are going to be coming out from Stephen will be under the Flight Studio brand. So that does include the Diary of a CEO, but also the new podcasts with Davina, Paul Brunson, Davina, and all the other...
Steve, if you see this.
So technically, we should be referring to Flight Studio, because Diary of a CEO is just another podcast within it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, you get there to Flight Studio.
Yes.
And yeah, walk us through day one. What are you feeling like? Are you nervous? Are you excited? Who is it that you're introduced to? Like, what team are you part of first? Mm-hmm. Yeah, tell us everything.
Yeah, so at this point I had quit my job, moved to London, and I'm not from London, so I didn't know where anything was, so I got lost on the first day on the way to the office. And when I got there, Grace Andrews was there, mm-hmm. and she was... I think she was just waiting for me at the lift, or I can't quite remember, but she just waited for me at the lift. Wow. And I came down and I just said hello. And I had already met Grace, because Stephen's team gave me tickets to come and see him at the... he had like a live business and life tour earlier on in the year. And they gave me tickets to go... so I had already met Grace. I had already met members of his team on that day. I just hadn't met Stephen yet. So... you know, we went up the lift, went upstairs, and then I got to meet everybody. Everyone came up and gave me a hug and said hello. And they are really, really friendly people. When he speaks about his team, it's because they're extraordinary. They're really lovely people. They work really hard, and they really do know their stuff. So I just jumped straight in, and they wasted no time, gave me a MacBook and a big goodie bag of like loads of different things in it, from his Dragon's Den investments, books and things like that, t-shirts, you know, hats, and honestly, it was such a big bag. They really just put so many things in it, but it was a really great experience. I had a really good and fun like first day.
Amazing. And like, in terms of like the internship itself,
mm-hmm.
like how many different departments did you get to preside over during your stint there?
Yeah, I all of them.
Wow.
Yeah, except for the finance team, because I mentioned I hate numbers. I have no desire to improve in that area of my life. So.
And is that like, they were like, oh, you could sit in finance, and you were just like, no, yeah. I don't like finance? So you could pick and choose what you wanted to do?
So they just said, you know, what would you like? And I said, oh, music to my ears. Let me tell you everything. I've always worked in marketing, so I said I'd specifically like to spend a lot of time in marketing, but, you know, it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. So I didn't want to just be really closed-minded and stay in a box. I thought, if I have time to be in the production team, I'd love to be in the production team. In the experimentation team, I want to know what the data scientist does. I want to know every single department. I just want to be in there. And they said, yeah, that's fine. And then they brought me in, and I stayed in the marketing team for a couple of weeks. And then every other week, I was on a rotation with the commercial team, production team, and just went around with the entire... And the team's not very big. It's about... it was 30-ish when I was there. It's not 30 anymore. But yeah, I just went through every single department and just did loads of work with them.
Wow. And what was the biggest learning you had working with the Flight Studio team?
Mm. Good question. So I think Stephen's team, or the Flight Studio team, are very fixated on 1%. And you'll hear Stephen talk about it like in podcasts. If anybody follows him quite closely, you'll see that he's a really big advocate of 1%. So 1% kind of stands on the tiny, minuscule little things that you can do to improve literally whatever you're doing. So Stephen talks a little bit about how they measure the CO2 levels in the podcast, because that actually improves the performance of the guests during the pod, like during the recordings.
Oh.
And that's something that they celebrate. And when I was there, if I did, I promise you, the smallest thing that was good would be immediately celebrated.
Really?
Immediately celebrated.
Do you have an example of something you did that was celebrated?
So on one of the weeks, this was the week that I got to meet Paul Brunson. So we went into the new his new office, and we were looking to like celebrate his first recording. So my job on that day, I was working very closely with the EA of the team. So we wanted to get something to celebrate the podcast. We weren't really sure what. So I went ahead and got like glass cups and I think like champagne flutes, so that when Paul came out, we would have champagne ready and like just a really nice, pleasant, warm experience to celebrate what he's done and this achievement. And the reason why that moment was so important is because as much as people see all the great things that the podcast does or what Stephen does or what Flight Studio does as a whole, there are so many tiny little experiences that make people feel so a part of what is going on. And I think that was a really almost like an emotional connection that we all managed to experience together. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when people celebrate your birthday, when people celebrate your graduation, any form of celebration, you feel quite honored. You feel quite loved. You feel like people care and remember you. So having a moment like that for his very first podcast, we all came down from the office, waited outside, and just, I think I have a recording of it on my phone, and just cheered him on. And he, you could tell that it meant so much to him with the way that he responded, you could see it in his eyes. And that is what makes the team a team, and that is what makes the podcast so special, not just what we do but the people behind it.
I love it. And talking like about the people behind it, like I know you mentioned the fact that they really focus on the 1%. Is there anything else that like you experienced working with the team, like what was it that you're like, oh, this is why they're so exceptional, this is why they're so successful? Was there anything outside of the 1% that really stuck out to you?
Yeah, it's probably the rate in which they experiment. I don't think I've ever worked in a team that experiment as frequently as they do. And when they say they experiment with everything, they do really mean with every single thing. I've seen it myself. So I think whenever you experiment to that level of consistency that frequently, you're going to fail a lot, but then you're also going to succeed a lot more because you're trying different things. So I think that is probably one of the things that have made the podcast so successful. The 1%, the experimentation, and the quality of people. And Stephen talks a lot about hiring, and there is a reason. Because if you're able to hire exceptional people, and he stands away from their jobs and allows them to do what they're good at. He always says that he hires people that are better than him because he trusts that that's what they're going to be able to do. So I think those are some of the key differences with working with a team like that.
I love it. And then you mentioned the fact that on day one, you met a lot of the team, not him yet. How far into the internship do you meet him, and what was it actually like getting to reconnect with him and catch up with him?
So I think I'm pretty sure it was either the end of the first week or around the beginning of the second week. And you know, because they've all worked with Stephen for a really long time, so they were really relaxed. My heart was beating. I was sweating. I was thinking, he's in the build. Like I wanted to be calm and behave myself, but there was nothing in me left to do that. So I just really tried to stay calm. He was like right behind me, and I could just hear his voice, and I just thought, oh my God, he's actually here. And I was genuinely so deeply excited. And I just wanted to just scream and shout, but I couldn't because they're all so normal. And I just thought, I can't be the weirdo in this place. Well, I can, but this is not the time to do that. So I just tried to stay calm. And Stephen was really, really kind. And I guess, you know, if you know everybody in the team, you know if one person is new. So he came all the way from the back of the office and sat next to me, honestly, probably a lot closer than where you are. He sat right by my side and he just said, hi. And he was just asking me how I was and what I was doing. And I think one thing that really stood out to me is after he said hello, after he asked me, you know, what I was working on and everything else, he then thanked me for coming. And then he said, you know, the team's really grateful to have you here today. And I just thought, wow, like, I the honor was mine. But he came back and said, no, but we really love the fact that you've come all the way here. And I just thought, that's really kind of you to say that.
I love that. So what's the thing that surprised you most about Stephen?
He's very tall.
Is he?
Yeah, he's very. But also, I think it's because I've never really had to be that close to him, and it's just a small thing. But I just didn't realize how much bigger than like, he's a lot bigger than me. He's a really, I think he's actually quite a tall person, but I just didn't know because I'd never met him in person. I just watched him online or seeing him at events, really.
And then, obviously, like, you're an intern, mm-hmm. but I'm sure you want to, you know, do great work, mm-hmm. stand out, you know, set yourself up for whatever it is you want to do next.
Yeah.
When you catch up with him over the time, I don't know, like, are they reviewing your performance? Like, how is it that you measured success with regards to the internship?
I think I came in to learn. So anything, and I tried to document every little thing that I was learning the entire time of like the entire duration of the internship. So mm-hmm. I think I just wanted to learn as much as I could. And I was quite content with that, make the most out of the opportunity because it was still quite short stints in every team. Mm-hmm. So I had a lot of things to absorb in such a short period of time, in my eyes at least. And as long as I was learning, that to me was a good enough measure of success because I know that the opportunity that I had was also very rare. Like, they don't really offer internships. So I don't think that I had a very strict measure of success at that point. I do now, mm-hmm. but at that point, it was just the season of learning and I was happy with that.
I love that. And then the other thing I didn't ask previously, I know that you're doing like the bi-weekly stints in the different departments. Is it like what are you actually doing? And what I mean by that is, are you shadowing mm-hmm. or do they have some tasks that you can actually get stuck in mm-hmm. and exposed to? Or is it just like a bit of a mixture dependent on like the team you were part of at that
no,
time?
No, they actually gave me like projects and work to work on. You Amazing. Think I almost didn't feel like an intern a lot of the time. There were moments I would shadow just because there was no other way for me to gain that knowledge. But yeah, some days I was helping with the run club. So there was Mental Health Week, I think Mental Health Awareness Week on one of the days that I was there. And they were organizing a run club with some influencers in collaboration with the Conversation Cards, which is a product that is sold through Flight Studio. So I was immediately, I think that was on my second day that I was planning like thank you cards. I had to get my jogging set on, take the conversation cards to the location. Like it felt like a full-time job immediately. Like they didn't waste any time with me. I think that's why I like working in small teams, because they're never shy to give you responsibility. So yeah, all sorts of things. I think I helped out with the DOAC raffle. Lots, so many different things. I wrote pitches. I wrote parts of Steven's script at different times. Wow. I managed his social media at some point. I think probably almost throughout, to be fair. Writing social media copy, sourcing, like just all sorts of things. Just, yeah, it was definitely not, it didn't feel like an internship at all.
And then, so like, coming back to like the listener, mm-hmm. as they hear about your experience and they're like, oh my God, I can't wait to land mine with like a high profile person.
Yeah.
Like, what would your advice be to the listener to make sure they maximize any potential opportunity they get in future?
So I think it comes down to your attitude quite heavily. In my eyes, as I was there, there was no task that was too menial, because there would be days that I would be writing copy and content, and there'd be days that I'd be carrying boxes to the post office with like 50 to 100 conversation cards in it, and I'd have to make sure that it was paid for and sent off. And then there were so many different things that I had to do, but no task was too menial. And I think when you have a good attitude, you can actually just naturally make the most out of every opportunity, because it depends on your mindset. The truth is, life isn't perfect. My life, however, is, as you know, as social media will declare, it's not perfect. No one's life is perfect. So you can't just wait for your big break to start having a good attitude, or else you're never really going to make it. So I don't think that I think the way that you think about yourself and your attitude probably weighs a lot more than people realise.
I love that. And then the other thing that I think about, obviously Flight Studio, Stephen, he has the podcast, mm-hmm. he has the other podcast. There must be so many people of influence who are in and out of the building, mm-hmm. he's recording them.
Yeah.
Is there like a protocol when these people are in, and like, yeah, how is your network improved as a result of being part of this internship? Or yeah, were there like rules in place?
There were no rules in place.
But you're just respectful.
Yeah, just really respectful. I think it really comes down to the kind of people that Stephen's hired. So I presume one of the requirements would be, as he's hiring, that, you know, you'd have to be quite calm in the midst of high profile people. So the day, that first day that I met Stephen, and I just wanted to scream and shout and jump and be like, oh my God, Stephen, I love you. Like, I couldn't, I actually had to really show some self-control, because if I then met, because I think in that same stint, Simon Cowell came to the office, or not directly to the office, but to the recording studio. Paul Brunson's been there. I can't just leap on them, and I can't start screaming and shouting, because that would just be highly inappropriate. So there's no immediate protocol, but you do have to have some self-control. You know, it's not necessarily appropriate to ask for their numbers and things like that. So you just have to respectfully allow them to do their job, help them, to support them.
Can you connect with them on LinkedIn?
As you wish.
Yeah.
As you wish. I think you just have to, in any situation, especially if you're working with someone really high profile, emotional intelligence is key, because you have to be able to make them feel comfortable in order for them to do their job. If I made Paul Brunson uncomfortable prior to his podcast, it would be me hindering what he needs to do. So it's in my best interest to help him be comfortable so that he can do an excellent job to support the entire team and do, you know, the podcast recording. So I think, yeah, apply emotional intelligence and be really sensitive to the way that people are feeling, their emotions, the way they're acting, because you have to essentially accommodate that. So I do my best to be really respectful, really human and really natural. Even honestly, I have found it difficult at times, especially while working with Stephen, being a really big fan, but then also being in his car and sitting right by his side. It's almost a borderline surreal experience, but I really had to really try to just act natural and act normal and not do anything absurd, because
but as you say that, though,
important people.
You just mentioned the fact that, yeah, you get to sit next to him, this, that and the other. Does it help to crystallise the fact that he's just a human, though, right?
Yeah.
And that, like, everything he's achieved, not anyone can achieve it, but if you work as hard as you, if you continue to work as hard as you do, why not you?
Yeah.
Like, did it help to crystallise that for you?
Yeah, it did. But also, anyone can achieve what he did, especially because he came from a very disadvantaged background, which he openly speaks about all the time. I didn't come from a middle-class or upper-class background either. So yeah, treating people like human beings, because at the end of the day, they are just humans.
Yeah.
And that's the best way you should relate with anybody. But then also, regardless of the fact that they're high profile celebrities or, you know, quote unquote important people, at some point in their life they were just like you, you know. And I think a big thing that I've learned, or a big value that I stand by, is just treat everybody with respect. Like, whether they're important or not to you, just treat everybody with respect, because at the end of the day, you don't know who they're going to become, but then also, that's what they deserve. You're not better than them. They're not lesser than you. Just treat everybody with respect. And that should be, like, foundational.
And, you know, just to add to what you said there and tying back to what you said previously, I think if you are able to secure an internship, meet somebody, like, you shouldn't think about what it is they can do for you.
Yeah.
You should be thinking, what can I do for them? Like, how is it I can add value?
Mm-hmm.
Because if you come with a value add mindset,
mm-hmm.
the reciprocity, it comes, like, automatically.
It does.
And I think sometimes, like, what I've seen is that people, they see these people of influence and, like, oh, do this, invest, help.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, there's, like, an approach, I think, that lands best and allows people to be comfortable,
mm-hmm.
as what you said. And I think showing that, you know, I just want to support,
mm-hmm.
I think it tends to lend itself, like, very well.
I completely agree with you. I think I had a conversation with Timothy Amir about that, and he said, very similar to you, the best way to have a conversation with someone that maybe would not naturally give you their attention is showing them what you can offer. But I think it also goes back to, you know, upskilling yourself, reading books, gaining knowledge, going to these networking events, like, build yourself up as much as you can so that when those opportunities do come by, you are ready to give something. And also, if you flip it, how would you feel if every time you left your house, people kept asking you for things? Would you not, you just feel used? So I think it's also thinking about, how would you like to be received? What would you appreciate? And replicating that to somebody else.
Yeah, I've got two more bits.
Sure.
In this section, and then I'll go into my next set of questions. First is, you spent we spoke about the fact that they experiment like crazy. Mm-hmm. One thing I want to know, and I'm sure, you know, there's the answer out there, but I don't know. Mm-hmm. Is it all in-house software, or do they have particular softwares that they use to experiment?
I think it's a range.
Okay.
Probably some in-house, some out-of-house, some they build themselves.
Okay.
You know. So it's really, that would be almost impossible to cover in one episode of There's so much that's done in that team, so.
And then, like, on that as well, mm-hmm. like, you know that you can't replicate what Diary of CEO does, or, sorry, what Flight Studio does, mm-hmm. and they back themselves, and there are copycats who try and, you know, take the little bits here and the little bits there. Mm-hmm. With all the knowledge that you have, like, is there once again like rules on? Oh, like, I beg you don't talk about that. Or what is their attitude to the knowledge that they share and how it is shared, I suppose, with a wider audience?
Do you mean specifically with like the Diary of a CEO podcast, or?
Yeah, like what makes them successful? All their podcasts, right? Because I'm sure what you're doing mm-hmm. with Diary of a CEO, you're doing it with Paul Brunson, you're doing it with Davina McCall's. Mm-hmm. So just their podcasting strategies.
Yeah, I think they've tried to be consistent with what's worked with the Diary of a CEO's, you know, the way they've launched it, the way they've grown it is what they're going to replicate with Davina's and with Paul's and with the others' podcasts. But I think it still boils down to the same things. They are able to really have a good understanding of what their audience needs. They're very good listeners to what their audience is looking for. So they read the comments, they listen in, they ask questions, they're always prodding to see, these are the viewers, surely the best thing to do is just ask them what they want, and then give them exactly what they want, tease them into it, and then give them reasons to stay. So I think they've done the same thing with Paul. Obviously, he is a relationship expert, so really honing in on breakups, you know, sex, pornography, all the unusual topics that people wouldn't naturally want to have a conversation about, but are curious about. He will then go into those things. So I think they're really good listeners and they understand how to get through to their audience. Crossing with, obviously, more experimentation and implementing strategies that work. And using the right kinds of people. Because the reason why they've used Paul is because he's... And I've met him in person. I promise you, he's by far, like, the warmest person you'll ever come by. He's so pleasant. Even just upon approach, he's so pleasant. And that is the right kind of person to have a podcast, because they're going to replicate that same kind of conversation that I've had with him with anybody else that has a conversation with them. And they will naturally open up. So choosing the right kind of people also have a big impact on how, you know, the success of the podcast. I presume if maybe they didn't do it with Paul and maybe somebody else, I wonder if it would have been as successful. Because Stephen talks about it, hiring the right person, choosing the right people does really make a big difference.
I love that. And, you know, talking about that again, like, we all know Diary of a CEO. Mm-hmm. You've mentioned Paul Brunson. Mm-hmm. What arm of Flight Studio surprised you the most, or, like, gave you the most joy outside of the actual podcast? Because everybody thinks, oh my god, Diary of a CEO, but there's so many feathers to the bow. Mm-hmm. What took you by surprise during your internship?
I wonder, because I think there's just so much to it. I think it probably boiled down to the people again, and I keep coming back to that, but I wouldn't come back to it if I didn't think it was such a big thing. Mm-hmm. I remember one of the days I was just in the office, and the lead data scientist just mentioned that, you know, he'd love to have like a little lunch and learn to go over all the new data that he's kind of gathered over the past couple of weeks, and how it can really inform decisions. The next few days we were in a lunch and learn, like, it was so quickly implemented, nobody wasted any time, the entire team was there, we all got Joe and the Juice sandwiches and smoothies, and we sat down and watched the entire presentation. And I think it just goes to show that when someone has an opinion, regardless of their position in their team, everybody is so quick to listen. Mm-hmm. Nobody thinks, oh, do you know what, I'm too busy for this, I'm kind of working on this. Everybody stopped what they were doing in the entire team and sat with him and watched his presentation, and he went into detail about, you know, data and how it impacts and the podcast and the, you know, the decisions that they were going to make in the future. So I think when people are able to value other people's roles, equally to what they're doing, you're going to work better as a team. And it's so easy to think that your role is important, but the reason why Flight Studio or the Diver CEO has done really well is because they have a really good sense of collaboration. And anytime you think that you're going to fly, it's not because you're flying by yourself, it's because other people have supported you get to that place and to stay in the air and to soar. So that does make a big difference.
And I think, like, for anybody who's running a business or part of a team, mm-hmm. that's the real takeaway.
It is.
Like, you cannot do it alone.
You can't.
You really are the sum of your parts. And yeah, that collaboration piece is key. Yeah, oh my God, there's so many things, like, because I just know, like, if I was listening to this, like, what would I want to hear? Yeah, the first thing I wanted to know, are there any misconceptions about Flight Studio?
Good question.
That you can just say, that's just not true. Like, you see a lot of comments, this, that, and the other, and you're just like, oh, that's such gas.
Yeah, I think any comment that says something like, Steven's mean, it's such a lie. He's actually really quite nice.
Yeah.
In person, I honestly can't think of any misconceptions because everything that I was watching online, I looked out for it in person and it was there. So no, there's no misconceptions. He does bring his dog to the office sometimes.
Well, the misconception is that people say he's mean, but he's not.
Yeah, I think the only one is that people actually do, for some, I'm not sure what it is that I've heard people say, oh, is he really? I get that one question I get all the time is, what is Stephen Bartlett really like? And I always think, he's nice. I don't know why everyone thinks he might be really rude or mean in person. He's not. He's actually a really, really lovely person. So.
And then, like, with, like, the whole experience that you had,
mm-hmm.
what is it like for you listening to podcasts now?
Oh, it's ruined it. I can't enjoy it the same way. I honestly don't. It's even really? When I watch the, I, to some degree, because it's the, I think it's because I know
what even, amazing is.
Yeah, it's the, but also I think I've now been on both sides. I've now seen it, I've lived it, I'm on one, and it's I think I've been through the entire process. I still do enjoy them, but it's just, I think it's because I look at them and I think, oh, this was cut, or I know what's happened just before here. And it's not just with Stevens, I guess it's with anybody's podcast. I look at it with, like, a different lens now because I know what it takes to make one. And I think, if anything else, I have such a big respect for them. Like, it looks very easy to get a couple of guests, get them sat down, record a conversation and post it online. It's not. It's so hard. It's a lot of hard work. So I think, if anything, the only thing that's probably changed is just my respect for people who do it, my respect for you who's doing it. I completely understand how hard it is, yeah. And the effort and the love and the burden of it all. So yeah, but yeah, when it's definitely different. I look at them and I just think, oh my gosh, I stood there, or like something like that. But yeah.
How long does it take him to prep for an episode?
Oh, it really does vary.
Because, and I'll just say, because yeah. I've watched, like, every Behind the Diary,
mm-hmm.
and when I'm looking at, like, the calendar slots,
yeah.
it's like, he typically has 45 minutes prep, and then mm-hmm. he's smashed. I'm like, there's no way he's that well understood about the guest in yeah. 45 minutes. Mm-hmm. I know, you know that he's going to have people that work for him, and they're like, these are, like, the key things you need to run over. But does he really grasp what he's going to say in 45 minutes? If he does, fair enough, man. Because I know he said, like, with the experience,
mm-hmm.
he kind of can just freestyle it and he knows the questions to ask.
Yeah.
But, wow.
Yeah. That's true.
Wow.
Because I think I've been, from the recordings that I've seen, he's come in, like, moments before the guest and sat down and started the podcast. I don't know if he's, like, preparing in his car or whatnot, but you also have to remember, this is a team.
Mm.
There's a research team that is sitting down, spending hours, you know, trying to understand the guest. And Stephen also, who has a really, really good way with people, really emotionally intelligent, and has some sort of understanding about the guest that he's speaking about. So I think it's a combination of the support from the research team, but also I think Stephen, I'm sure he does prepare, but I'm just not sure to how much. Yeah. I think he does just, he's been in the business for a while, so there is an element of just knowing what to do.
Yeah, and like, just to round this point, because I'm giving him like his flowers, because mm-hmm. even like, even if there's a research team,
yeah,
like you still have to digest the research.
He does it.
And that is what I think is most impressive, because, yeah. and I don't know like if they're, because you don't see notes on the table or whatever,
mm.
but he's just like, in your book, you said this,
mm.
but I'm like, what? And yeah. then when you watched it, I'm just like, He really is like a special person.
He is.
But okay.
I definitely agree with you. I was with him one day and he was filming with Google. And it was like, we were in the car together. We was just moments before he was about to record. And I just thought, I've just been with him for the past 45 minutes. I've seen him do nothing except for just go and sit down. And I just thought, where did you find this information? Where did you find this knowledge? Is it just like hidden in the back of your brain? But I think there is, I honestly just think he must have that knowledge, like that's
or he's just walking around with an earpiece.
I don't know what he does. I don't know how he does it, but I watched him and he just sat down and just poured out information. I just thought, whoa, where did you, I just watched you brush your hair.
Yeah.
You didn't do anything else.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know where it comes from, but he must, but also whenever I've been around, people similar to Stephen or Timothy Amu, they spend a lot of time reading, like, and absorbing things. So I think at a point when you absorb information so much, it just kind of pours out. And I presume that might be his, I might ask him if I get a chance to speak to him. Yeah.
How long did you end up working with the team for?
So I'm trying to remember the specific number of dates, but it was definitely over a month. Mm-hmm. So towards the end of, or what would have been my initial end, I just started joking around in the office and saying stuff like, I'm never going to leave. And then I would laugh and go and sit down again. And I kept doing it until I think someone told Stephen that I said that. And then I didn't know he was in the office this day. And I sat down at the production table because that was the team I was working with. And Stephen walked right up behind me and said, so I heard you're not leaving. And I just, I just thought I should have, I don't even know what to say. And I sat there quietly for a few seconds and I said, yeah, do you know what? I'm not going to leave. And then he said, he just looked at me and he just thought, you know, I respect that. And I said, thank you. And then he said, so what's your game plan? So how are you going to stay? Where are you going to sit? What are you going to do? And I just thought, I better stop inventing ideas right this second. And I did. But to be fair, I did have a game plan. Like, I wasn't just going to go in and convince myself or convince them that they should keep me without having some sort of plan. So I told him what my plan was and he said, okay, good plan. And then he just went back and sat down. And I just sat there and I was so stunned that conversation even happened, because I didn't know he was there and I had been joking about it for like a while. I just don't know who told him that I said that, but I wasn't afraid. I just thought, I didn't think he would. I think the shock was that he actually came up to me and addressed it. And I just thought, oh. But yes, after that, and I guess numerous conversations, they ended up extending it. Okay. But it was a lot of, honestly, at a point, you know, I was really determined. And I'm sure people could see it in my eyes that I wasn't joking. When I said I was going to stay, I meant it in every way, shape and form. So I think they kept me on for a little bit longer. And I was really grateful because that was the week that I got to spend with the experimentation team, which was obviously very valuable. But yeah, I think I always say, if you want something, just go and tell them. Tell them. Just go and say it. You don't have to be so blunt as I did, but or you can if you want to take that risk. But just you're not going to get it if you don't ask for it, to be honest. And I kept asking. It doesn't. It doesn't. And I asked all the time. I just, do you want to keep me on for longer? And then I would joke about, like, on my last day, I'd always say, on my last day, I'm just going to come back on Monday like nothing happened. And then I did. So I think just try.
Okay, so if you, like, had to just, summarize the mm-hmm. experience in a few words, what would you say?
It was by far one of the most extraordinary experiences I've had in my career so far. And I can't compare it to anything else that I've ever done in my life so far.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. And then, obviously, the internship ends. Mm-hmm. But your story doesn't.
It doesn't.
So, yeah, like, you've obviously had the most amazing experience of your life so far.
I have.
But life goes on.
It does.
So,
it does.
Yeah, how is it you, like, take that experience and move forward with your career?
Yeah, it was an emotional roller coaster, I must say. And I think I say this because I want to dispel any life is perfect kind of myths, especially in my position. I know that I'm very privileged to have worked with Stephen, and to be even in the position to be able to comfortably quit your job is not to be taken lightly. So There's always going to be a lot of risk taking in everything that you do, but you know, with that, you take pride in knowing that great things will come from it. So after the internship, I took a little bit of time off just to kind of make decisions, recuperate, strategize, and decide what was going to be next for me. And I decided to stick with what I was good at and stay with social media and content and marketing, especially having experience with Stephen and
the team.
The team doing personal branding with him was great. So I just continued with that. And then I was quickly picked up by Timothy Armu in literally a matter of days. Wow. And worked with him.
Okay, so we've had Stephen Bartlett. Mm-hmm. Now we've got our boy Timothy Armu.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he obviously sold, is it Fan Bites?
Yeah.
That was a few years ago now. Mm-hmm. From what I've seen of Timothy, he just looks like he's vibes in, like, being very charitable, like, giving out a lot of, like, game advice, inspiring the next generation.
Yeah.
Like, is he onto a new business venture? What is it he's actually doing at the moment?
Yeah, I think he's spoken a little bit about the book that he's planning to launch soon. Okay. He is working on quite a few different things, but I think I'm going to have to leave it to him to announce. Okay. But there are, a few things that he's working on, but I think his biggest focus at the moment is the launch of his book. That's going to be coming out soon. I'm going to have to double check if I can share that, but I think it would be okay. But it's been a fun experience. Working with Timothy has also taught me a lot about business, which is something that I've always wanted to just gain more knowledge on, really. Obviously, that's what he specializes in, buying, selling, growing, and all of those kind of things. So that was a really also fun stint that I've done as I've been freelancing.
Amazing. And like, you've worked with two of the youngest, most successful people of colour in the UK. Are there any similarities or differences that you've noticed between the two?
Similarities, I'd say their work ethic, very hardworking. Because, you know, at a point, if you're not talented, just choose to work hard. Just make that decision. Just, you know, if you've got nothing left, just put grease on your elbows and get to work. Very hardworking, very knowledgeable, seems to like reading a lot. I think I learned a lot of that from Timothy. He does do a lot of reading, speaks a lot about books. If anyone follows him on social media, you'll see that. Speaks a lot about books and the books that he's reading at the moment. They all seem to be very obsessed with health and their bodies. And I say that in the most positive way possible, because I think that it's very easy to become quite relaxed in that area and make it a lesser priority. But they're both very obsessed with, you know, fitness, health, taking care of yourself, because at the end of the day, that is the same vessel that's going to take you all the way through. So why not take care of it? So I'd say probably a few of those things. If I think of any more, I'll definitely share. But yeah.
And any differences?
I'm not really sure how to quantify it, but I do think that they are quite different people. But they're also very successful in their own fields, and they've made it work, and they've made it happen, and they've grown and sold and continued on. So.
And you mentioned the fact that you're freelancing now.
Yeah.
Like, where is it that you see Ruth in the next 5 and 10 years?
Oh, you sound like my parents.
No, that aged me.
It's all good. Yeah, in the next 5 years,
I'm manifested.
I'm still on the journey. I actually don't think as far as five. I deal with my life, and I always tell my friends this, I deal with my life in seasons. So I never wait for the year to end to start a new year. I start and end New Year's during the year, in the middle of the month, whenever I think that my life needs a bit of a change. So when I moved to London, that was a fresh start. When I started freelancing, that was a fresh start. When I met Stephen the first time, that was also a fresh start. So I think you should never limit yourself to, and this is my personal opinion, to specific annual, monthly plans, because life is so fluid and you can't control. I never thought that Stephen would say yes to me that day, and that's completely changed the trajectory of my entire career. So I can't focus on having set plans, but what I do is I have regular aims and goals. One of them is actually to speak Mandarin fluently. That has been a goal on my list for a very long time. And I'd love to live abroad again, but also I might love to start something of my own. I'm not sure what it would look like. I'm not sure what it might be. But just, I guess, keep an eye on me and you'll see. Mm-hmm. And I think it is worth being the best in the game. So, I mean, as I've been doing marketing for some time, I think my aim is just to keep growing, keep learning and doing the best that I can in that area. But I don't have a 5-year plan just yet.
I love that. And, you know, you mentioned being the best in the game. Obviously, you've learned from some of the best in the game. But, like, to the listener who is also very ambitious, do you have, like, any other resources or books that you could recommend to people to, start them on their journey today? Sorry, I'm really putting you on the spot.
No. There was a book that Timothy recommended to me, which was, I think, Cybernetics. I think I'm pronouncing it correctly. I'd also recommend The Diary of a CEO if you haven't already read it.
33 Laws of Business and Power.
Yeah, I'd actually definitely, I highly recommend that actually, because that deals with your life holistically as well. But also, I would say listen to the thought leaders in that industry that you're looking to excel in, because they would be able to recommend also specific books on what you'd like to improve on. It's all well and good being great holistically, but it's even better to be very good at what you're looking to improve on specifically. So I would say never shy, like I promise you, even in my position, I'll just go out and DM anybody on Instagram that I think is doing particularly well, and I'll ask them, you know, what book would you recommend, or what's the top 10 books you've read recently? And some may ignore me and some may respond, and I still take that risk, and that fear of rejection doesn't really exist for me, because what scares me more is not achieving, or what would scare me more is the idea of knowing that I missed something because I was emotionally inclined, or I allowed my emotions to cloud my opinion or my decision making. So
I love that. It's all about changing the frame. And like I had a guest on, and it's like sometimes hearing no is better than hearing nothing at all.
Yes.
And yes, understanding how you frame things, it will spur you on to be comfortable in uncomfortable moments, is what I'd say. Like to the listeners, they've gotten to the end of this conversation, like what's like a final takeaway or piece of advice that you want them to take from this conversation?
I think I definitely say get comfortable with being uncomfortable. I've grown the most in the most uncomfortable positions, and I don't look back and regret them. I think the more that you can put yourself in risky positions, in uncomfortable positions, and that will vary depending on where you are in life, but I think taking some form of risk will always guarantee new opportunities, new doors being opened, because you're never really gonna grow staying in your comfort zone. For me, moving to London was huge because I don't really have family in London. I don't actually know anybody in London, and I quit my job in the same week, started working with Stephen, and also had no one around me that actually knew me. I didn't have any friends there. That was huge for me, but also that was a very good risk to take, as anything else. I'm sure people wondered, you know, why did you quit your job? Well, I wanted to go all in, you know. So yeah, definitely take risks, take opportunities, because you just, the sense of regret is so bitter that it's not worth experiencing.
One thing I will just ask on that, because, you know, to people who are looking for advice, you quit your job, which is a huge thing. Had you prepared? And what I mean by that is, like, did you have a little bit of a safety net? And, you know, like, I don't need to know, like, how much money you had or whatever like that. But when you quit, was it like, damn, I literally don't know how I'm going to pay for rent in London? Or, you know what, I'd been saving, because I've been working for a few years, so I was able to take a calculated risk. Because we ain't trying to make people homeless.
Sorry, I should retract some of my words into, in fear that I would cause somebody to actually make a poor decision. Take calculated risks is what I should say. So I did. I think because I had met Stephen earlier on in the past year, as soon as I had met him, I had started saving up money in preparation for leaving my role. And even after they had extended my internship and it had ended, I wasn't in a super big rush to get another role, because I had created a safety net for myself, and I knew that I wanted to be able to take that risk, because if I didn't quit my job, I wouldn't have been able to fulfill my extension. And I wasn't prepared to go back and ignore an extension. So that was the risk I was willing to take. And I think in my eyes, it definitely paid off. But yes, please don't just, you know, quit your job without any financial support or anything like that. It's not also a wise decision. So just take calculated risks, or risks that you're comfortable and uncomfortable in taking.
Yeah, I love it, Ruth. I love it. We've got a quick fire round.
Sure.
Are you ready for this?
No. Go ahead.
experience all flight studio departments again or specialize in one area?
Flight studio. My fear is that the answer to everything will be flight studio. Please continue.
Produce a podcast episode or create a viral social media campaign?
Podcast episode.
Favorite Diary of a CEO app?
Right now, probably the Simon Cowell one.
Okay, love it. Favorite quote?
Wow, from everything that you've asked me, I'm surprised that this is what stumped me. My favorite quote is, So my favorite quote at the moment is, I guess what's kind of carried me through the year is, fortune favors the brave. And that's what my manager told me on my last day of working in the company before I had left and started working with Stephen. And anytime I was a bit scared, I just thought, fortune favors the brave. And I just said it anytime I felt nervous and it carried me through. So yeah. And fortune really does favor the brave.
I love it. Obviously, this opportunity came about from you being a big fan of Diary of a CEO.
Yes.
Are there any other podcasts you highly recommend to the listener?
Call Her Daddy.
Okay.
Great Company.
Okay. Yeah. That's two.
Did you say three?
No. One, actually. Oh, you've given me two for the price of one.
Yeah.
And then final one, who would your dream dinner guest be?
My dream
dinner guest.
Oh, this is hard because I've actually met quite a few people that I've always wanted to speak to. Maybe Amelia from the Chicken Shop Date.
Amelia de Lundenberg. Yeah. Sorry, I've butchered that. Oh, no! Amelia D is what we'll say. Amelia D, sorry! Moldenberg.
Yeah, I really admire her. I think she's done an amazing job. And she's done it with it just goes to show that being authentic plays such a big part in anything that you do, because people are buying into her. And she's extremely awkward, but she sells it so well. And I think I used to think I was a really awkward person until the day I spoke to Stephen and I realised that maybe I'm not so bad. But it just goes to show, just be yourself. Because that day, I stammered, I fumbled, I was speaking really fast, and I still got the internship. So.
I love it.
Yeah, be yourself.
Yeah, this has been such an insightful conversation, such an inspiring conversation. We do have a closing tradition on this podcast.
Okay.
With everything that you've been through and experienced, what advice would you give your younger self, and would you still be doing the same thing?
What advice would I give my younger self? Probably just don't stop trying. Don't stop trying. Believe in yourself. I have a very bad tendency to be really hard on myself. My friends are always trying to drag me out of it, so yeah, just be easier on yourself. It does get better. I think that would probably be
and
about
still
it.
Doing the same thing,
yeah, because I think if I didn't make all the mistakes I had made, I wouldn't have done all the things that I'd done. So I try my best not to look back, because if you're looking back, then you're not really walking forward.
I hear that. Ruth, to the people who have gotten to this point, where can they find you? And you want to plug any socials?
Yeah, on LinkedIn. That's my favourite platform at the moment. I would have never thought that would be my favourite, but it is. So you can find me on LinkedIn at Ruth Emeku, and on Instagram, Ruth Emeku as well.
That's it. Ruth, thank you so much for sharing your story on this podcast. This is this has been such a great episode. And guys, if you've gotten to this point in the podcast, you know what to do. Like, subscribe, share, comment. Let us know how you found the podcast. Let us know who you want to hear from next. This has been another episode of What My Best Friend Does. If you didn't know, now you know. Now go and take some immediate action. Over and out.